I have three kids. They eat so much. We try to eat real food. We try to cook when we can. We try not to waste too much because it drives me nuts and it's expensive, and also for obvious climate reasons, which is why the Mill Food Recycler changed our lives a couple years ago. It is an odorless, effortless, and fully automated food recycler. Look, we've had this thing front and center in our kitchen for, again, a couple years now, it feels like, and it is just such a game changer. Way less waste, less smell, way less garbage, which, by the way, saves you money. No leaky bags. Look, you got peels, bones, stalks, whatever, leftovers, dump them in the Mill, and Mill dries and grinds them while you sleep. Again, it doesn't smell, which I don't understand. It's sleek. It's actually sexy. Here's a question people ask. How often do you empty it? Good question. It's every 3 weeks. I don't know, maybe. And there's a bunch of us. Plus, there's a little app where you can control it if you want and set a schedule, and it shows you how much food your family keeps out of landfills. A delight. Look, you can get $75 off right now when you go to our special partner site. I'm going to read you the link, but you should know it's also in the show notes, and you can just click it. It is mill.com/LP/important-not-important. That is mill.com/LP/important-not-important. I couldn't remember that, so we put it in the show notes. It's right there for you. Check it out. Huge thanks to Mill for sponsoring our work and doing the right thing. And thanks to all of you listeners for supporting our partners.
I have a theory that only girl children, especially, are always extremely advanced and sophisticated. And that can be harmful to the mom, especially, because I feel like I also hear about them being, well, both parents, they can be extra smart and mean, you know, like a dinosaur that learned how to open a door.
Welcome to Not Right Now, the podcast about parenting through all of this.
We'll be talking about / crashing out over topics like
soccer snacks and sea level rise.
While the Arctic melts? Question mark?
Cleaning out uneaten lunchboxes again at 4 p.m. or 10 p.m. every day.
Youth sports and other camp signups you forgot about and won't get into anyways. And is there such a thing as unstructured time anymore for anyone? For me?
It's not an advice show.
It's a you're not alone and you're also not crazy for screaming in the shower kind of show. I'm Claire Zalke from Evil Witches.
And I'm Quinn Emmett from Important Not Important.
You can find details on anything we talk about in the show notes or at our website, notrightnow.show.
And if you like what you hear today, please share it with a parent who needs it or who might laugh and tell their kids to be quiet. And then drop us a nice little 5-star review.
And reminder, you can send questions or feedback to questions@notrightnow.show.
Hey, it is Quinn. It's 2026, something of that sort. We have a guest today. Very exciting. Claire's been finding all kinds of fun people for us to talk to. And today's guest is Joy Natanya Thompson. She is a parent. She lives in Los Angeles. She is a fiction writer. She writes a newsletter, sometimes called Midweek Joy, which is on Substack. And she's a pleasure to talk to and is really interesting for us because Joy only has one kid. And that is by choice, and it is a fascinating examination of the similarities between our lives and hers and her kids versus ours. And yeah, so I don't know, it's fun. I hope you guys are safe and everything out there. Holy shit,
I feel like I'm raising my dad, you know, only my dad is nicer to me than my kids, and sometimes he gives me money, which my kids don't do. Anyway, Joy, how is your 2025 going so far?
It's 2026 and not great for anyone. I'll answer.
It's going like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good so far. I'm in LA. And so last year it was like crazy at this time. I'm not near the fires. I'm about 20 miles away from Altadena. But it was like, it just felt really apocalyptic a year ago. So I'm just kind of like, wow, at least life is normal right now. And yeah, normal here right now. You know, it's like not normal in so many parts of the country. But our little neighborhood and house are safe.
It feels like it's been so long since those fires, and it seems like only by the grace of God could we get through another year without something like that. Has there been anything like showing that something like that could happen again, or like they're just so far things are under control?
With the fires, I mean, it's always a threat in this area. And, you know, they're definitely doing everything they can. I work for a GIS company, like as an editor. So I'm editing articles all the time about how fire departments and agencies are just doing all these things. But it's just, I don't know, it's inevitable in some ways. So you just kind of always wait for the next one. I don't live in the hills at all, and I never will, because I grew up in Southern California. And so I'm like, I'd rather be down in the flats. And so we're usually safe where we are. But yeah, there hasn't been anything. We've had a really rainy winter, so that might help. But then usually that ends up just creating a bunch of brush to dry out and then create a really bad fire season the next year. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why Quinn left, I think, was like the just insurance going up and just the like nonstop thrill a minute of.
I was in Studio City, Laurel Canyon for a long time. It was great, but yeah, not great. And you're right. You're totally right. Everyone's like, great rain. You're like, yeah, all that stuff's going to grow and then it's going to not rain and then it'll burn. So
yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
So I was reminding Quinn about our impetus to talk. It's been a little bit since we first reached out. Remind me. And I said it's pretty simple. It's just the topic of how many kids you have or don't have and sort of the baggage and choices that comes around that. But I think we could also talk about siblings as we are young and as we are older. But remind me how old your daughter is now.
Yeah, I have one daughter and her name is Zadie and she just turned 10 on the 4th of January. So yeah, freshly minted double digits.
And how did it go? How did her birthday go? I think we talked a little bit about having a kid whose birthday is around the holidays. Both you guys have kids whose birthdays are around the holidays. And I'm curious to know how you manage to separate that amount of joy, specialness, presence, you know,
because
I know
joy.
My husband.
We gave up.
Yeah. How do you guys make that happen when you have a kid who, you know, when you may have Christmas or whatever, Hanukkah coming up right after that? How do you guys make room for all of it?
Yeah. When's your kid's birthday, Quinn?
I was just thinking, it's interesting. It's a couple weeks before Christmas, but we're usually like, okay, holiday season. Also, we got to make sure to fit in his birthday. Where they're kind of in a row. One of my other kids is a couple weeks before that and me and Thanksgiving and all that stuff. But yours is interesting to me because do you ever get through the holidays and then go, oh, fuck, right, that we got to do the birthday. You think you're done? And you got a birthday?
It's horrible. It's so horrible. And I feel bad saying that, you know, but like even my husband and I were like pretty, like we were trying to have a baby when we got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I wish that we would have just skipped that month and been like, let's try next month because then we won't have a Christmas or January baby. And I think we did it for Christmas. I was like, okay, this won't land on Christmas, so we're good. But I wasn't thinking about how shitty it is to have a kid who's, so this year her birthday landed on the day before school went back. So the very last day of winter break. And, you know, she's a total extrovert. She's a party girl. She's incredibly expensive taste. And she just wanted a party. And last year we did this like whole Willy Wonka themed party, which I have to say I was very proud of. And it was amazing. And I said, we're not doing that again. We're not doing a party next year. And then here I am. We did a party again. So my plan is we start talking about it in November. And I'm like, we need to decide on a theme and we need to get the ball rolling because once the holidays start, like it's going to be over. So we decided on a theme and I kind of ordered, you know, her theme was Paris this year. And so I got this like cool banner from Etsy that looks like a cafe and it said Zadie's Cafe or whatever. So I ordered that early, you know, like stuff that I needed to order early. And then I just kind of put it out of my mind. I sent the invitations and I put it out of my mind because I was like, oh, we'll have, you know, a few days off to get all the other stuff and figure everything out. And then it's like New Year's Day and, you know, you just want to be done. Yeah. Like New Year's Day, we always take down our decorations. And that's like the best part of Christmas to me is taking down the decorations and being like, okay, we're restored to like our normal state. And to do that and then be like, shit, I have to do all this stuff now. So, yeah, it's kind of like running a marathon and then being asked to like choreograph a 3-minute original dance at the end. And you're just like, I'm dried out. I don't have anything left. But we did it.
So how do you do presents, though, for that? Do you just buy a big pile of presents and then you break off a chunk for the birthday? Or do you kind of treat them as some totally different things and, you know, you do Christmas and then you're like, now it's birthday time.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of did go crazy with buying presents this year. I think I just like kind of start to get into this weird like trance and I just keep buying because you just at first I'm like, she doesn't want anything. She doesn't need anything. And then I start looking at all the gift guides and then I'm like, oh my God, she would love this. She'd love this. And I'm Jewish. And so we also do Hanukkah. And sometimes we do presents for Hanukkah and sometimes we don't. And this year I just had so many gifts that I was like, we're doing presents for Hanukkah this year. And just once in a while. And it was, you know, it's like stocking stuffer stuff where it's like there's too much stuff to even put in her stocking. So like that kind of thing or things that I wasn't quite sure if she'd like. I gave her, you know, for Hanukkah, it felt like low stakes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just kind of saved stuff for her birthday. And I gave her the things that I thought would keep her occupied for Christmas because I was like, okay, we have all this time, this like dollhouse that she had to build herself. So, you know, and then she really wanted like a desk and a chair for her room. So we got that for her birthday too. But then of course she needs something to open from us. So
sure. That's funny. This year, I mean, for those who have not tuned in to the last episode, we had a medical emergency in my family and we had to postpone the recording of this episode. And so on the good side of it, in some ways, was like, well, I get to be shittier at buying stuff for people than normal. I have an excuse. But, you know, my husband, to his credit, did an amazing job picking up all the pieces and being like, he's just been such a trooper with the kids. I mean, the bar is very low, but things like helping my dad put up the Christmas tree. He's going over there today to help my mom help put up put together a toilet seat for my mom. So I was like, I can't completely ignore it. And he had no ideas for me because he was so spent. So I got him literally undershirts, underwear, socks, and tea. But he was so excited. He loved it. And I made a crossword puzzle of like clues that were all about him. And he had a great time. So, you know, I feel like men can be easy to shop for. Quinn, can you confirm or deny?
Yeah, I think with a modicum of self-awareness, men can admit that they're easy to shop for, which is to say, especially I literally was showing my kids, who are not even the ones to think about yet, though I guess they are, that book, Nobody Wants Your Shit. It's like Decluttering Before You Die. And my daughter was like, I'm 10. And I was like, that's great. But your room is constantly full of stuff. So get ahead of it. You know, let's fucking think about it. Versus, I don't want anything. I don't want anything. I really don't.
Yeah.
And I know I'm surrounded by toys, but that's only because I have very little joy otherwise. And I'm not allowed to have these at home.
How do you and Dana go about the gift philosophy with the kids who are closer to the holidays? I know you try to give them fewer things.
Yeah, we've been trying to do fewer things and more like experiences, even if it's like a coupon book for, you know, Nintendo Switch time or baking with grandma. I don't know. What would they want to do that I don't mind doing or would actually enjoy doing as well? So we gave my 10-year-old like, hey, here's a little card. And I print off Canva. We'll go to a baseball game of your choosing. Great. He was so excited.
Here's my question about coupon book, though. Do they actually use them?
They do.
Because it's a good question. Idea, but yeah. Do they actually like
it's gotta
trade
be
it
usable
in?
Stuff. And I think to an age, I have a 13-year-old, I would be curious what, if any, coupons would be something he was interested in using. We're kind of crazy about screen time, so maybe more of that, like for him to call his girlfriend or, you know, talk to his friends about butts, but yeah. Or just, you know, a day without me commenting on what they're doing.
Letting him do, you know, what is it? Grocery store. What is that show where you can go shopping as much as you want at the grocery store? Like
was
that.
Like sweep? Grocery store sweep?
Yeah.
Supermarket sweep?
Supermarket sweep, but at 7-Eleven. For 7 minutes, you can shop for as much as you want at 7-Eleven.
I truly think if it were coupons where, like, I left them alone, they would use them and run out of them quickly. I texted Claire last night, like 8:30. We're always been crazy about putting our kids to bed early, but like he's 13 and his body's changing. He's got things to do. And we don't even have that much homework, but we've always been like, here's the deal. We get into bed earlier than everybody else. You can read as long as you want, as long as you stay in bed. I don't care if it's 5 hours or 20 minutes, like your call. Just don't involve me after we're done. Don't get out of bed. And last night I texted her at like 8:30 my time. And I was like, hey, bud, you got to go to bed. He goes, I'm not interested in going to bed yet. I was like, I don't care. How do you want me to respond to like, go to fuck to bed? That feels like one of those moments where he'd be like, I have a coupon where you can't talk to me for the rest of the night and probably worth its weight in gold. So
funny to me. But of course, it's the kind of thing where when someone else says something funny, it's funny at the time. But to you, you're like, I fucking hate you. I was telling Quinn how my husband and I were saying how our 10-year-old son is being such a jerk lately and like very contrary to everything. And my husband was so over it. And they were in Arizona in Flagstaff. And at night, my husband looked up in the sky and said, wow, there's so many stars out tonight. Look at all the stars. And my son looked up and said, I can only see 5 stars. And like, and of course, I'm so mad. But
it really is those little ones where you're just like, fuck you, man. You know?
Yeah.
God.
Oh, yeah. And then Steve said they walked by a restaurant and Steve said, ooh, that food smells good. And James said, I think it smells weird. So anyway, for some reason, they're better. These stories are better, like when you tell them compared to like when you experience them. So anyway, Joy, I love the topic of siblings because I think every parent is always wondering whether they had the right amount of kids, whether they had the right combination of kids, things like that. Talk a little bit about the writing you've done, the thinking you've done about the topic of only children and sort of, you know, where you come from with that and, you know, the kinds of things you've been asked, the kinds of thoughts you have. Just go off.
Yeah. Okay. Well, starting out, I never thought I would have an only child, like ever. It didn't even cross my mind. It just was not an option to me. And I grew up in the suburbs where I don't think I knew a single only child all of growing up, at least that I knew of. So it just was like a foreign or like something that you see in the movies, you know? And I have 2 older sisters and my mom had the 3 of us within 3.5 years. So we are really close in age. So Quinn, when you talk about your kids really close in age, I'm like, yeah, like the highs are very high and the lows are very low. That's what I always say, especially when you're all the same gender.
And yeah. My brother's wife has 3 sisters. There's 4 of them. Same thing, like 4 kids. 4 girls in 5 years. And her dad was an emergency room doctor. And she frequently describes her dad pulling in the driveway and just refusing to come inside.
Hey, I have 3 kids. They eat so much. We try to eat real food. We try to cook when we can. We try not to waste too much because it drives me nuts and it's expensive. And also for obvious climate reasons, which is why the Mill Food Recycler changed our lives a couple years ago. It is an odorless, effortless, and fully automated food recycler. Look, we've had this thing front and center in our kitchen for, again, a couple years now, it feels like, and it is just such a game changer. Way less waste, less smell, way less garbage, which, by the way, saves you money. No leaky bags. Look, you got peels, bones, stalks, whatever, leftovers. Dump them in the Mill, and Mill dries and grinds them while you sleep. Again, it doesn't smell, which I don't understand. It's sleek. It's actually sexy. Here's a question people ask. How often do you empty it? Good question. It's every 3 weeks. I don't know, maybe. And there's a bunch of us. Plus, there's a little app where you can control it if you want and set a schedule. And it shows you how much food your family keeps out of landfills. A delight. Look, you can get $75 off right now when you go to our special partner site. I'm going to read you the link, but you should know it's also in the show notes and you can just click it. It is mill.com/LP/important-not-important. That is mill.com/LP/important-not-important. I couldn't remember that, so we put it in the show notes. It's right there for you. Check it out. Huge thanks to Mill for sponsoring our work and doing the right thing. And thanks to all of you listeners for supporting our partners.
Because it was like 4 girls between 13 and 17. And he was like, why would I ever involve myself in that? It's so dark.
Yeah, it's seriously wild. And I love sisterhood. Like, I love having sisters. And we were each other's like ride or die. Even my oldest sister and I get along really well, always have. And she was kind of like second mom to me. And we kind of grew up in like a chaotic childhood. My dad wasn't really around. And so we kind of really had to be there for each other. But my middle sister, Rachel, she would beat me up. We were just always adversaries. But we still like, you know, like we were like integral to each other. Mm-hmm. And we still are. Yeah. So we're really close. And then my mom got remarried when I was 12. And my stepdad brought 2 little brothers into my life. And
wow.
So they've been around. Like, they started dating when my brothers were, like, 2 and 6. So they're my brothers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then there's 5 of us siblings, if all of us were home, like, if they weren't at their mom's. So I kind of grew up in a big family. Like, I have those experiences. And, you know, even now, if we go on vacation together with just my parents, my siblings, and our partners and our kids. That's like 20 people. It's just, it's a lot of people. And I always thought of an only child family as that's probably really sad. That's probably really quiet. Ooh, you know, how sad for them. But then I had a baby and it sucked. And like my pregnancy was okay. And like I was living in Colorado at the time and in this like really crunchy environment. So I was like trying to have the baby at a birth center. I did all my prenatal care at a birth center. I took all the classes. I did all the stuff that you're supposed to do. I watched the documentary. I did the whole thing. And, you know, of course, I end up with a 40-hour labor and emergency C-section. Mm-hmm. So it's like my sisters and I call it the Moyle special. Moyle is my maiden name because all of us ended up with really long labors and emergency C-sections. So it's, I don't know. It's the Moyle curse. But anyway, I had that and it was just terrible. And it kind of started my journey into motherhood like on a really tough foot. And again, we were living in Colorado away from all of my family and close friends. And so my husband was home for 2 weeks and then he went back to work. And then I was like alone with this baby. I had never spent time with babies. I'd never changed a diaper before my daughter. So I was just like, I don't know what to do. It felt terrifying at the time. I had postpartum depression, didn't know it. I just thought this is what it is now to be a mom. So it was like a really rough first couple years. We did move back to LA and that helped. And I eventually got on antidepressants. That helped a lot. I eventually went back to work. That helped. But, you know, it was like I was just getting my head above water when Zadie was turning two. That's when I got on antidepressants. And so it was like, okay, this is when people have another baby, usually like this 2 or 3 year mark. And I'm like, I literally cannot even imagine putting myself through that again. You know, it felt like this huge gamble. Okay, maybe I have the resources now. Maybe it would be different. Maybe I could schedule a C-section because I just know that it's not going to happen for me and that would be a better recovery. You know, all these things. But it was like, and maybe not. Maybe I'll be just as depressed for 2 years, but I'll also have a toddler. Maybe my marriage won't sustain this because it already feels kind of shaky. Like it was just, it just felt like we can't do this. And then I'd say when Zadie was four, it was kind of like maybe, like we were still talking about it. It was still on the table. And then the pandemic happened. You know, and I guess some people did take the pandemic as a sign to like, hey, this is a good as time as any to have another baby. But that was like not the way we took it at all.
No.
And my husband works in like he's a project manager in construction. So construction did not shut down for a single fucking day in the pandemic. So it was like I was just home alone again with my child. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was like this is we don't really have a lot of parent help either. So that's a big part of it. Yeah. So anyway, around that time, and we even started talking to a foster agency because we're like, maybe we could do foster to adopt and have an interview with them. And then we're like, what are we doing? This would break us. Like having another kid would literally break us. We can't do it. And that was so hard to like really admit, you know, and just admit it and be like, we can't do it. And if that means that we're like weaker than our friends or most of society who can manage to have multiple kids. You know, I had to like work through all those feelings of like inferiority and failure and shame and all this stuff. And I would say probably 2 or 3 years ago is when I think all three of us started to be like, this is good. Like the three of us, this is what it's meant to be. This feels really good. This is who we are as a family. But, it, you know, that was when she was seven. It took a long time to get there.
Yeah. That is, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And first of all, what you might call inferiority, I might call wisdom and
awareness.
Because, you know, I mean, that thing, people talk about having another kid, it's just like putting another quarter in the vending machine. Because I was induced both times with hypertension. And so after the second one, I was like, okay, I'm not good at this. I fumble the ball at the 1 yard line each time. And it's not going to get easier the older I get. So that certainly played. But I would hear all the time, are you going to go for the girl? And I would like, and it would really pain me because, I mean, we could talk more about this later. The fact that you're one of three sisters, you know, resonates with me because sisterhood has always eluded me in any, like literal, every capacity that you could imagine. But I'd be like, well, first of all, that's how you end up with like twin boys after you have two boys, you know. But
seriously.
Also, yeah. I can't do this. And my second kid was, I enjoyed him more as a baby, but as an older kid, he was a lot more difficult. And I was like, what if you have a kid who requires even more care? Now, Quinn, I know that you guys didn't set out to have three kids necessarily, you know, one rolled out, you know, as a special bonus. But did you guys, I'm just curious, with three kids and you're not all of one sex, do you still hear, did anyone ever say, do you want to go for another? Or does everyone see you and be like, that's enough? We would never, these people have more.
All the above. I mean, I spent most of the time Joy was talking, hoping she would say I'm in the market for another one so I could send one to her, which is most days these days. They're great. However, yeah. So I think, well, I don't think most people see that, mostly because, you know, we are usually, not that anyone cares, but like we've been pretty honest with her. Like we got hitched and I was 6 years younger than my wife and they were like, yeah, sorry you're having trouble. Let's see what the story is. And we went to do, you know, starter IVF, basically like a Clomid shot and good luck. And they were like, well, that's not going to work. And then the short answer is we never figured out really why we had so many issues. It wasn't specifically my junk. It wasn't hers after they combined. You read into that however you want. It was a shit show. It went downhill. You know, I feel like I got a dissertation in at least, you know, 2012 era IVF. But eventually, finally made one with our first one, like last embryo available. And same thing, like pregnancy was fine, besides, you know, the IVF stuff where you just got to be on her back for a couple of weeks to start with. And we had lost a few along the way before that, too. And then we had them, and it was so traumatic for everyone involved for 1,000 reasons. And then I remember going, you have to go see your IVF doctor shortly after. And I don't recall why, but I remember him, and he's great, we owe him everything in the world, but he was like, if you're gonna do another one, you should try now. We were like, there's a baby in the car seat behind us, we can't have a baby, we have a baby. And he was like, yeah, but look at the math, bud. It basically didn't work out the first time, like, despite the fact that there's a baby here. And we did want them to have a sibling. We both have siblings, for better or worse. Mine are more spread out, hers are less so. She's got one, I've got three. And we were like, okay, fuck it. Sure. Why not try it? And it took a little while and we got it to work. And then, as Claire said, the third one was our love child, which, sure, why not? I was the second oldest of 32 cousins. I'm the second oldest in my family. Grew up, love babies, taught kids, coach kids, all that stuff. I would have had 12 or so. I mean, keep that in perspective. I just told you I would FedEx you one of my children. So we met, got engaged, got married, was told we couldn't have a baby, and then sort of by science failed and then made some. And so we never really had the chance to have the conversation of like, how many kids do you think we should have? Or should we do more? It was just like, if you're going to do it, because it's probably not going to work. And then we had three kids in, you know, 3.5 years. And same thing, you're in it. There's a lot of postpartum depression. There's a lot of sleep. There's a lot of, I don't know, any marriage or partnership or anything that could survive this chaos. And we were super privileged to have help. Not a ton, but we had help. Dana does always jump. We do have one in a freezer somewhere, I will say. And we've often thought about just like anonymously sending it to a friend or something.
Do you know what it is? If it's a girl or a boy?
She thinks she knows. I don't recall. Every year when I get the bill for the freezer storage, it doesn't say. But I do, at least, you know, so that would have been from probably like 2013, 14. I mean, it's frozen, so it's not like aging. If we chose to freeze it, it must have passed most of the tests then, though they're much better and more specific now. And it's much easier on the embryo to take the tests now. So the point is, I don't know, other than it seems to, you know, possibly have a chance, but I don't know. She's like, you can do whatever you want with it. She's like, I'm not carrying that fucking thing.
Yeah.
She's going to be 50 next year. She's like, no, thank you. She's like, I love our kids, but oh my God. So that's kind of our conversation. I don't know. We're lucky to have what we have, but oh my God.
But no one's ever given you any kind of suggestion that you should have more kids.
Not after they experience my kids. No. Do you get the, what about a girl?
Oh, yeah. Even now, from one of my cousins, and I'm like, first of all, Steve's had a vasectomy, and I was asking him to have a vasectomy while I was pregnant with my second kid, because that's how much I hated being pregnant the second time. So I knew we would have two no matter what. And I guess I really thought I was having a girl the second time because I have a brother and I felt so different, like mainly shitty with my second pregnancy compared to pretty good with my first one, that I felt pretty sure that I was going to have a girl. And then the first one was a surprise, you know, the gender reveal, whatever you want to call it. And the second one, I didn't want to find out because I just wanted to find out. And I like had to get over myself for a while to know this is it, that this is only going to be two boys. And there are a lot of great things about having two of the same, as you know, with sisters, hand-me-downs. And I think, and this is not across the board, but I do think when it's one of each, they don't have always the same likelihood of having the same interests necessarily. And that's, again, having two of the same is not a guarantee of that. So they do things that are great in terms of playing sports together, but they have very different personalities. And anyway.
So Claire and I agree, and I fully both embody and agree that boys are dumb. We're so dumb. You can say that, like, we're simple to get gifts for. We're dumb. And you were texting me about that last night, about how, I don't remember your exact wording, but basically not having a girl means the boy dumbness is less diluted in your family than it may be in mine.
Yeah,
which depends on the day.
Yeah, I don't know if that's accurate. That's our thing, Joy, is that I have a lot of big theories. I know they're all probably wrong and maybe even offensive, but I have a theory that only girl children especially are always extremely advanced and sophisticated. And that can be harmful to the mom especially, because I feel like I also hear about them being, well, not both parents, they can be extra smart and mean, you know, like a dinosaur that learned how to open a door. But I feel like it's these only children, girls who are like rolling sushi for fun, you know, or they're like going to bake cookies with no oversight and things like that, where I'm like, my kid's idea of fun is never anything remotely helpful to me whatsoever, you know, nothing that is promising for their future. And so, again, that's like
short term or long term, it's detracting.
Yeah, like downstairs right now, I was stepping over cushions. I mean, again, he hears both sides of that. On the one hand, they're entertaining themselves. On the other hand, they got Nerf guns for Christmas. We put it off for a long time. You can't fight City Hall. And I was like stepping over furniture on the floor because they were having a Nerf gun fight down there, which is, again, like, you're glad you're having a good time. Probably will end in tears at some point, like glorifying gun violence, making a mess for me. You know, we're all going to have to clean this up. So, you know, depends on what your, pick your poison, you know. But for me, my husband is an only child. And I think that maybe, like, our first son was, I had a hard time as well. The adjustment was not easy. Same as you. I didn't have a lot of experience around little kids. I kind of had a, I don't know how to explain it. I think I thought that I could just do it myself. Not myself, but I didn't need help because I had the resources and I had the, I don't know what. In retrospect, I would have asked for more help than I had. But in retrospect, our son was a pretty good kid. But I think my only child husband, the way he described his upbringing and the way he kind of ran his parents, basically, and like they had this dynamic where he was the center of the universe, basically, made me think I don't want our kid to necessarily have that. That's not how all only children are. That was just his experience. But it has been fascinating to watch him with my kids, because at least with my brother, I knew, and I can talk about my brothers and my relationship. I know what it's like to love someone and hate them at the same time, like in a sibling way. And I bet you guys like have experienced that with your siblings too, where you're like, well, I didn't ask you to be here, you know, but also since you're here, I feel very strongly that I must protect you against a lot of
things. I don't feel that way about any of mine, but I'm so confident they feel that way about me.
Where are you again in the running order of your siblings?
So my older brother's 4.5 years older than I am. I think my mom had a pretty gnarly ectopic pregnancy in between us and miscarriage, and then me, and then younger brother's 23 months younger than I am. And then to the relief of everyone everywhere, they had a girl 4 years after that. They went for the girl, and truly against all odds, but thank God they got one because the three of us are such idiots.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, my husband, would watch the boys like hate each other and love each other within the span of seconds. And he just could not understand this dynamic. Whereas at least I was like, I understand. Like, it's a roommate you didn't pick. And, you know, there's ups and downs to it. Now, so Joy, do your sisters or anyone in your family, do they provide any pressure that you might feel about, you know, having had about having more than one kid? Or does that not come from them at all?
I'd say when Zadie was little, like, my mom would sometimes be like, oh, are you going to have another one? But again, there's five of us kids. So we're producing enough grandkids for them to, you know, be entertained.
All on you.
Yeah. And no, I mean, my sisters and I are really close and we're all incredibly honest about motherhood and how much it sucks a lot of the time. And so they were completely supportive. My one sister also only has an only daughter who's a year older than mine.
Oh.
And then my sister who's on the East Coast has two boys and then she has a girl. And she was actually pregnant with her daughter when she came out to help me for 3 days in that first week when my husband went back to work. And it was amazing just to have my sister there for a little bit. And she was pregnant and she was like really just torn about it. I'd say it was a surprise. And, you know, they had all those conversations and questions. Are you going to go for the girl? Because they had two boys.
So we're on a big cleaning streak right now. As you can imagine, I'm very annoying about it to my children. But we're trying to dial it down to the essentials at home. So whether you're an appliance, a piece of furniture or clothing, whatever, you got to earn your spot. Everything's got a place. Everything has utility, which is hard with kids who constantly bring things into the house and all their stuff. And it's really hard when you're trying to feed them constantly. And there are various appliances that are advertised to you that can literally do one thing that honestly can't justify the counter space. But I'll tell you what does. It's the Mill food recycler. And holy cow, does it ever. It doesn't even go on the counter, by the way. It goes on the floor like a sexy trash can. It plugs into a standard outlet and voila, no more food waste. Got peels, bones, stalks, whatever, leftovers, put them in there. And then while you sleep, the Mill automatically turns on, dries, and grinds them, and it doesn't smell at all. It's crazy. Again, let's rehash. Not only does it not stink up the house, or two, cause leaky trash bags, which are disgusting, and three, send leftover food to the landfill to turn into waste and then methane and then rising oceans, it actually makes you feel good because it grinds up all of your food waste into these adorable grounds you can use in the garden, you can give to a local farm, you can put them right in the green bin. You can even ship back to Mill via postal service pickups like it's Netflix in 2003. Anyways, a delight, a game changer. You guys can get $75 off right now when you go to our special site. I'm going to read it to you, but you should know the link is right in the show notes and you can just smash your finger against it. It's mill.com/LP/important-not-important. Can I remember that? No, that's why we put the link right in the show notes. So anyways, huge thanks to Mill for doing the right thing and trying to cut down on food waste, most of which comes from our homes, for sponsoring our work. And of course, thanks to you listeners for always supporting our partners.
And, you know, she was just really overwhelmed. She's a physician's assistant. She like is very career driven. You know, their boys were really small. And I think she'd say even now, like that her daughter is 9, like that almost broke them to have the third. Mm-hmm. Obviously, she's incredibly grateful for her daughter's life and all of that. And, you know, she's irreplaceable and everybody loves her. So my sisters like completely understand, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're all cut from the same cloth in some ways. Yeah, like we all need sleep. Like we all do horribly on like little sleep, which is a big part of being a parent in the early years, you know, all those things. But I will say, like, my sister that has the two boys, she kind of says the same thing that you guys do, that boys are so simple. Like, she's just like, it's so easy with them. Like, of course, they are crazy and they do crazy things, but she's like, compared to having a daughter, it's so easy. And I'm like, yeah, I could see that. Cause, like, my daughter, I mean, you said like only children who are girls are geniuses. Obviously, I think my daughter's brilliant. You know, I don't know if her grades show that, but I think she's amazing. But yeah, it's complicated. Like, I think that the mother-daughter relationship is always going to be complex, no matter what, even if you have an incredibly close relationship, which we do. I mean, she's only 10. Hopefully that continues. But yeah, it's a lot. And I'm glad that I don't have to split that attention right now with another kid, to be honest. Like, that part is good because it's hard. Like, just parenting is so hard. And, you know, and even my husband and I both have a ton of, not a ton, but we have serious hobbies. Like, I am a fiction writer and that takes up time. You know, he's a mountain biker and like goes on road rides and stuff that like takes hours and hours. And so like those types of things, like we can hold on to that more as parents because we have one child. It's not as big of a deal to just tell your spouse like, hey, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to be gone for half a day or even a full day. And they have one kid to deal with versus two or three or four.
I have a friend who said she has three kids and she said two is not enough and three is too many. And I thought that was because I never wished we had a third kid. I think with respect, I feel like everyone I know who has three kids, they lost their mind like after the third kid. And then some people were like, let's just go deeper and go for one more because what's the point? We already lost everything. So let's just dig deeper. But yeah, it is really interesting because my brother and I, we were playmates when we were little. And then we really had a combative, hard relationship for a long time. And I think that my mom being sick kind of brought some of that stuff back up to the surface. And I had a friend in college who was really close with her brothers. They would go party together, go to the movies together. And I would tell her, I was like, you know, that's pretty unusual, right? To be friends with your siblings. And I think now she's married to someone and I think she sees a little bit more that that is uncommon. But my son, my older son, his little brother is ADHD. He's got more of a like an explosive personality. And I remember him once saying that he disagreed with some of our parenting choices with his little brother. And he basically, I think, was like, I think you should punish him more and, you know, go off on him more. And I was like, well, I see that, you know, but you have to understand that doesn't work. You know, we can't, as much as I would love to spank this kid, and believe me, hardly a week goes by where I don't have the hankering for a spankering. It's not going to get you anywhere. And I told him, I was like, I know what it's like to have a brother who sucks all the air out of the room and it's hard. And I said, I see you. And I hope that, you know, I see you and you get yours, basically. Like, you get to stay up late. We have these talks. But on the other hand, I think that it's helped him. I think he'll be a cooler human in the future. I think he'll be a really good roommate someday. I know that sounds crazy, but he knows what it's like to live with someone crazy, for instance, and to roll with things when things get spicy. It certainly goes both ways. Quinn, did you fight a lot with your siblings, like physical fight, or have like big emotional battles with them that formulated you in any particular way?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we did a lot. It became a little weirder when I was like 11 and a half, 12, because all of a sudden I was 6 feet tall, truly like all of a sudden. So I was as big as my brother, even though he was 4.5 years older than me, and I was in the same sports. Like, it was a little strange. I mean, he was bigger and stronger. He could and definitely did just beat the shit out of me and 1,000% deserved. I think I've told the story, Claire, and I'll find the picture of it somewhere. How, keep in mind, again, like, my mom had this like horrific miscarriages in between us. So I was like the miracle baby. And she kept a baby book. Claire, have I told you this one? She, you know, kept like a little journal baby book like moms used to do when they were expected to stay home and just keep a baby book. And she only got, it was like, we're so lucky, this is so great, this and this. And then it's like you're watching like, you know, Shackleton in Antarctica. There's like skipped pages and like stains and things like that. And then there's just one entry, 18 months old, that says, Quinn has become a capital T terror. And then there's never another entry, Clay.
Yeah.
We found it. My siblings were like, check. Yeah, 100%. And I'm like, oh, that adds up. Yeah, that really adds up. So try to keep that in mind when I'm parenting my children, but also in constantly saying sorry and thank you to her. She's the greatest, because I'm sure we were impossible. Again, my sister is, it's ridiculous how much better of a person and a human and a sibling and a child that she is and continues to be. So I'm sure that was a relief for them. But at the same time, like, still had to get us out of there. You know, it's like, yeah. Jesus, my God.
One thing that's crazy about my husband's family is that his dad was married before his mom and they got divorced and he kind of surrendered custody in relation to his two older daughters. So my husband actually has two half sisters out there that he never knew. And so he had this very only a child life, but technically had two sisters. And he, one time his dad, it was right before our wedding, and my mom was showing his dad around the golf club where our wedding reception would be very proudly. And his dad looked out the window and said thoughtfully, I'm really glad I don't have daughters, which was like really fucked up just hey in general. And also he did have two daughters
also,
as well.
That's fascinating. There's so many ways to dig into that one.
Yeah, 100%. And yes, there's so many different things. One thing my mom said about siblings that is true, but also not helpful in any way, is that she told me once that whatever you have, because I was pregnant with my second kid, and I remember at the time, I don't know if it was pregnancy hormones or maybe if he was just at a good phase, but I remember thinking there's no way I could like my second kid as much as I like my first kid. Like that, I know that's a messed up thing to think, but that was something
true.
I thought. You know what's funny? I enjoyed James as a baby so much more because I was a mom that time, you know, and so we had a lot more. He was a really fun baby, but then something happened. She said, whatever you do, they're going to be different. And that was true. I mean, and they're not like so crazy different, but they have extremely different personalities. So if Zadie is amazing and awesome, then her brother or sister would be probably a basic bitch flop and, you know, pale in comparison. So, you know, you knew what was right. I'm glad that she has a lot of cousins. I think cousins are better than siblings because you get the fun. without the bullshit.
Yeah.
Do they see each other often, the cousins?
Well, one of my sisters lives in Philly. And so those three kids, like, we see them once a year, which is horrible. And they were supposed to be here this Christmas and then they got the flu. And so we didn't get to see them. It was so sad. But my other sister lives about an hour from me. She lives over in Seal Beach and she's the one with the only daughter. And she's 1 year older than Zadie. And so when she had Naomi and then was looking like she wasn't going to have another either, it helped me make my decision and be like, okay, they two are going to be sister cousins. And we call them sister cousins. And, you know, we saw each other a lot more maybe when they were younger. Now that they're both like preteens, it's, you know, not as easy, but they have that bond where it's, especially we're always like, you guys are going to be able to bond over how crazy your moms are. Like my sister and I are crazy in some of the same ways, like neurotic in some of the same ways. And that's a big part of having a sibling, at least for me, is being able to talk shit about your parents, you know, and just be like, can you believe that or whatever? And just like to have someone who like witnessed your life from the beginning is just so powerful. And so for her to have Naomi as that, and then my best friend actually recently moved to my town and she has three daughters and they're like cousins to my daughter. And so like she has those people, you know, and that best friend I've known since I was a baby. So she's like a sister. She's like that person that has known me through every single iteration of myself, who knows my family deeply. So even if it's not a like blood sibling, I think you can have those types of like really deep relationships that can kind of do the same thing. It's not exactly the same, but you know.
Sometimes a lot better, to be totally honest.
Yes. Since we were going to speak, I'm in this new phase of life with my parents where I'm kind of caretaking for them. And I guess it's not a coincidence, but all of a sudden, many of my friends are in the exact same place. I have literally a handful of people who I've been checking in on because their parents are newly in the hospital or out of the hospital or about to have surgery or just had surgery. And it is such a cliche, but so many families, there is like one functional sibling and then one fuck around, fuck off, selfish sibling, maybe more. And my brother's not selfish or fuck around, but we have different caretaking personalities. I live closer by. I have a car. He doesn't. I don't think he quite understands. Like when my mom was in the hospital, we had an argument because I asked him if he was going to come take a shift with her. And he said, she has around the clock care because she's in the hospital. And I said, well, the nurses are not sitting there watching her the whole time while she's trying to pull her IVs out, you know, to get up to use the bathroom. And she hasn't walked in 5 days. And we had a, you know, tense moment. And so I have a friend who is an only child and her mom's in the hospital. But anyway, all it is to say that sometimes I imagine being an only child means there's less bullshit to deal with. I can't tell if it's like a win to just do it on your own, you know, in executive decisions versus putting up with some useless sibling or selfish sibling or, you know, completely different perspective sibling. So,
well, yeah. And you might have, if you're an only, maybe you've built that support system because you need it. You know, it's like maybe by that time you have the best friend who's going to do that with you or whatever. I was going to say, when that happened to your mom, I like something really similar happened to my dad right at the beginning of COVID, where like he already had so many health issues, was like a non-compliant diabetic, had just recently had his second leg amputated, was still living alone, could barely take care of himself. It was so hard, had mental issues. And we didn't hear from him for a week. And so my sister and I were like, what's going on? This is so unusual for him to not pick up his phone. He lived in the valley, like an hour from each of us. And this was like deep COVID. We weren't even wearing masks yet. Like we were wearing cloth masks. And I remember we're like, okay, let's go out there and just see. And this is how bad my dad was that he left his apartment door unlocked all the time in case he fell and needed the paramedics to come in. That's the situation he was already in. So we like went out there together. And I remember it was like at night. And my sister had a mask, like an actual surgical mask that no one was wearing yet. And she's like, okay, here in case, you know. And we didn't even put them on. But, you know, we went in there and my dad was in horrible shape. And we had to call an ambulance. And that was actually the last time I saw him in real life, which is so sad. But I'm so grateful that my sister was there, you know. And I was thinking about you and having to discover your mom alone. And it's just so hard.
Thanks.
So. But it's not guaranteed that you're going to have a sibling that's going to do stuff like that with you. I lucked out. And, you know, during the 5 years that my dad was having a hard time, we just were able to take turns and do a lot together. So
the non-compliance is it's like breathtaking how folks of a certain generation are just like willing to take us all down with them by not making it easy on us to take care of them.
In so many ways.
Yeah.
Does your husband have siblings?
Yes. He has a sister 3 years older than him. Okay. And she lives kind of nearby, like 20 minutes away. But, you know, she's a good example of they get along fine. And they got along fine growing up. And we see each other on holidays. And she has two kids around Zadie's age. But we don't, like, hang out. You know, I wouldn't say that they're close. And so that also kind of helped me make my decision because it's just not a guarantee. And they were a close family. Like, they did a lot of stuff together growing up. And, you know, his parents are still together. And, yeah, I don't know. And she's a wonderful person. But just,
I feel like a lot of it is where we live. I don't live in Utah. I'm not a Mormon. But, like, where I live, it is like when someone has three or more kids, three is the limit, I'd say. But when someone has more than three kids, it's kind of like shocking. There's a couple of families at our school like four or five kids. And you're like, whoa, you know, especially if they both work. I mean, one of my best friends growing up was an only child, so it wasn't unusual. But I feel like it's not as commented upon. But also, I'm not a mom with an only child. Do you sense that? Do you feel like people have a different attitude towards it now than they did when we were younger? Or do you feel like you still get a lot of comments from the peanut gallery about choosing to just have one?
I think it depends on where you live. Like when Zadie was a toddler, we lived in Highland Park in LA, and everyone in the playgroup had only children except for one lady. So, and most of us have stayed with only one child. And that was common because they were all, you know, working in creative professions. They were all older. I was the youngest by far, and I was 31, like youngest by far in that playgroup. So that was just a lot more common out there. And now I live in a suburb where, you know, I don't know a single family with an only child. And we're kind of an anomaly, but people don't ask because it's rude. So like I had one friend, like we were going to a church for a while and we were hanging out like kind of regularly for a year. And then I remember we were at a park near my house and we were watching our kids play. And she asked in this way that I could tell she was nervous to ask and that she'd been wondering for a long time. And she was like, why don't you have any more? Can you not? Can you, you know, because I think she had two boys and she really wanted to have another and she was struggling. So I think she was just like wondering, because that's why I think sometimes people don't ask, because they don't know if it's like a fertility issue. Like maybe we've wanted another one and we never could, or maybe we had a child who died. Nobody really knows. So I think there's like mystery around it sometimes. Usually people ask me once I've known them for a year or two. And it's usually like curiosity less than judgment, you know, like they'll just be like, oh, did you always know you wanted an only, or, you know, stuff like that. But it's more like when you, like, I feel the judgment from people I don't know when they're, you know, not talking to me. I'll say actually like a couple episodes ago on this podcast, the guest said something about, oh, I would never take like parenting advice from someone with an only child. I was like, well, and that's common. You hear that a lot. And if I had multiple kids, I'd probably feel the exact same way. I'd probably feel like you're only doing half of my job. You have no idea what it's like. Like my sister with three kids says one is one, two is 10, and three is a million, because it's just exponential, you know? And so I'm like, I get it. But also like, it feels really invalidating, obviously.
Yeah.
Totally.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's the thing that you don't even think of. And I immediately jump to like, it's not like we're doing more, but see, there's no conscious, like it's all bullshit. It's not like you are, you know, raising fewer, like you have less going on. Like you just have the gas expands to meet the amount of the, what is it? Container? I don't know.
Sure.
Like, yeah.
What about a kid with special needs? You know, if you have a family with kids with special needs, and like, I'm not going to take advice from someone with kids who don't have special, you can do this forever.
But also like you have a very good friend who's got one kid and he's few years older than yours. And I remember during COVID, he was like, he's very close with our kids and our family. He was like, I'm so thankful your kids have each other to keep each other busy. He's like, because there hasn't been a second of a minute of an hour of the day for the past 2 years where I am not directly responsible for entertaining my child, basically. Because what else are they going to do? And that is fucking hard. Like
it was so brutal.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But you have to talk about that openly as well. You know, it's like, you got to be on all the time. Holy shit.
When COVID started, I remember sitting around a conference table, like when they were telling us, hey, you guys are going to take all your stuff. You're going to go home and you're not going to come back for 2 weeks. You know?
Yeah.
And I remember just being terrified. I was terrified. My daughter had just turned four. She's, you know, what you'd call a spicy child. She's just crazy.
Spirited.
She has a ton of energy. Uh-huh. A ton of demands, you know, and it was like, I was terrified with 2 weeks, thinking that I was going to have 2 weeks with just her and me. I was like, I don't know if I'll survive. you know, thank God she was in a daycare that like took her back at 6 weeks after 6 weeks because they had a lot of emergency workers, kids there. And I was like, please, will you take her back? They're like, oh, yeah. I was like, wait, could I have done this 6 weeks
Don't
ago?
Don't ask that question.
So it's kind of like intensive parenting in a different way. Like obviously having multiples is another type of intensive parenting, but like it's so much. And, you know, like a kid will take up all the air in the room if they can. And, you know, how you said like your husband was kind of like the center of his parents' universe or felt like he, like, it's like a constant battle to push against that because, you know, she's the only kid in the house. So, of course, we're going to kind of revolve things around her. And then there's this constant, oh, shit, like it's gone too much the other way. And now we have to be like, no, we got to pull it back and say life isn't just about you. And sometimes we have to kind of be dicks to her because we're like, listen, you can't just make that sound right now. That's so annoying. And if you had siblings, you would have someone saying, shut up, you know, and we don't say shut up to her, but we're like, OK, you got to stop making that sound.
The number of times a day I say to my children, I'm going to need you to not make that face or not make that sound. And they're like, I'm not. And I'm like, everyone knows you are. I don't know what to tell you, but stop.
Joy, I have told my older son to hit his younger brother and he refuses because sometimes we'll just, there's like martyr thing. I'll be like, James always hits me. And I'm like, well, hit him back. And he's like, no. And I get so mad. So I'm like, you would solve so many problems for us in the world if you just showed him his place in the world. So anyway, they don't do what you always want them to do just by being there.
Yeah. But even like sharing resources, like she just assumes everything's for her. You know, if you get a box of popsicles, when I was a kid, there's six popsicles in the box. There was three of us. You would see your sister eating a popsicle and be like, is that your first one or your second one? You know,
and
you were like, so intense.
And so no trust. No trust.
My daughter would just eat all six of them and she wouldn't even think that there's two other people in the house that might want one, you know, or watching TV, you know, she just owns the TV. And sometimes we're like, no, you know, like we watch the Tour de France every summer and she's just appalled that we are taking over the TV, you know? And we're like, if you have siblings, you would only get to watch what you want, like every three times. Like that's kind of, you know, how it was for me.
James would rather have less if he knew like that Paul, if like he would, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like he will never be that happy if he knows it's possible that Paul had possibly more than him. You know, he could have $1 million, but if Paul had $1,001,000, it'd be like worse than nothing to him, basically. Like, equity is more important than his own pleasure. Yeah, it is. I will say the one thing that my husband, I feel like it had to, that he was an only child about, and he's gotten better about it. He would get so butthurt if he ever felt like he was being if he was being interrupted or not listened to. And in my opinion, sometimes if he's listening, he would tell an anecdote and then take a moment to, I don't know, breathe or think or take a drink. And I would assume he was done speaking and I would start speaking. And he would be like, I'm not done, and get like mad about it. And I think that I was like, that's your only child speaking where you never have to get in there.
Oh, yeah. That's something my husband, that drives him crazy when we're with my family. Because he's like, you guys just all yell over each other. I'm like, yeah, that's how it is in a big family. Like,
that's it.
But Zadie does do that where she'll be like, you interrupted me. We're like, you were pausing for 20 seconds. Like,
I've
said this to her so many times. Yeah. I'm like, that's how conversation works. You just got to wait for an opening and then you jump in. That's how it works. So figure it out. Like, we're not going
to. What were you even saying that was so good to begin with? Yeah, well, this is really good to remember, I think, like, for me to remember the things I say that, like, even when you're complaining about the number of kids you have or the kind of family you have, that it might come off as insulting or insensitive to someone else. And it's always good to remember that everyone's kids are a pain in the ass in their own way, even if it seems like, again, a perfect daughter who knows how to parallel park at 8 years old and is shoveling the walk, you know, unasked for, and all of those things like Quinn's kids do, obviously, super helpful. I have a question for you that's sort of related to siblings, but like from your own experience, and I don't know if you want to go into this too deep, but like when it comes to blending families, how do you think you guys made out? Do you think your parents did it pretty well? Or like when you got your brothers, like, would you give advice to anyone on blending families based on your experiences?
I was like studying psychology in undergrad, and I remember reading about blending families, and I was like, oh, my parents did literally everything wrong. They did everything you were not supposed to do. So
like
they changed everything. Like, we moved houses, moved schools, moved churches, which was a big part of our life at the time. And you're supposed to kind of try to keep things the same as much as possible. So I was just like everything was ripped away and that made it really hard. But yeah, I don't know. I think it was really chaotic. I don't know. My sister was 15. I was 12. The other one was somewhere in between there. There was like a lot of puberty happening. There was just a lot of chaos. But, you know, I don't know. It all worked out. Like, I think they treated us. I think maybe this is something good, but they treated us like a family right away, where it was like, it's the five of you. It's not like the three sisters and the two brothers. It's like when we're all together, you know, like my stepdad would discipline us. And as much as I hated it at the time, I think it did help us blend more, because it wasn't like, oh, he's only dealing with his sons and my mom's only dealing with the girls. So that, I think that helped. And honestly, we went on some trips together, which I think also helped bond us. You know, like we went to Disney World and that was a total shit show. But, you know, I still remember it. I don't know. Yeah, I think. And maybe just letting us like kind of duke it out too as kids, like they didn't really step in a lot. I just remember fighting with my brothers, and I remember really relishing getting to be an older sibling for once and like getting to boss somebody around and, you know, but yeah, I think it's just time, because now they've been married for 30 years, which is nuts.
Wow.
And like Zadie will sometimes say, oh, well, but I'm not like blood related to Uncle Chris and Uncle Tim. I'm like, what? Who cares? They're my brothers, you know? And like she thinks, but to me, I'm like, they're just as part of our family. I don't know. Yeah. I'd say time. That's probably the biggest thing.
I'm sure there's no way to make it easy. It's like one of those things like child rearing, you know, or taking care of older parents, where you can read all the books and they tell you this and that, but that won't make it, you know, if the people involved haven't read the book and agreed to go along with the book, like it's all useless, you know? So I think that's really interesting. Did you, Quinn, did we talk about this? Do your kids fight physically ever? Do they ever get, you know, slap
at each
other?
I'm trying to remember if we talked about this. It was hard for my wife to understand because her only sibling is a boy. A whole different thing. But mine's boy, girl, boy. And I've had to really help her, first of all, not be triggered by and then be okay with and then become comfortable with and then even sort of endorse, which we're still working on, the boys beating the shit out of each other in a really, if you look at it closely and you do it more than once, understand like it is their love language. It is, I would say 3 out of 10 times, maybe 2 out of 10 times, there's some real antagonism towards the end. But most of the time, it's just them getting their shit out and in a positive way. And there's usually laughing or things. And you're just like, wow, he just got thrown down some fucking stairs. Look at that. But they're still laughing. And you're like, but they're not asking me questions. So that's a win. And I've tried to, she was like, holy shit, which I think is understandable. Unless you like really grow up in it slash around it and we're part of it. So I'm sure there will be more times where it goes south. But yeah, we try to just, I don't know, encourage. Again, it's really their love language. And they have a couple other things in common, sports, things like that. But you know, my older kid can sometimes be good. He doesn't get baseball. And I'm like, you're fucking 6 seconds older than he is. Like, nice try, buddy. But they get a lot. I don't know. It's funny. I definitely think it was probably more brutal for my brothers and I. Just ogres. Ogre.
I think that siblings are nicer to each other now. Like the families that I know, I'm like, these siblings are so nice to each other compared to what my siblings and I were, or what my friend's siblings and they were. Like I grew up with 3 other girls, like 3 sisters and 3 sisters. We grew up together. And one of them would drag her sisters down the hall by their hair. Like my sisters and I fought physically. I remember one house we lived in, there were bar stools and we'd hold the stool part to our stomach and just hit each other with the stool. My sister would hit me and I remember one time fighting with my brother, my stepbrother, and I don't know, we hadn't been steps for that long and we fought and he had a gash on his knee and accused me of it. And my mom had to stand with our nails out and she's like, well, Tim, your nails are all jagged. So you probably just did that to yourself in the heat of the fight. Oh, well, you know, just moved up.
Fucking 80s, and, man.
They
always talk about that with the NBA now, how like guys get fouled for breathing on each other. And you're like, in the 80s and 90s, I mean, what did they call the Blazers? Like the jailbreakers? Or, I mean, it was just like abuse. Different rules.
Yeah.
Different set of rules.
No, you could just punch someone in the face and get like a mild foul. No, it is my brother and I would fight until he got to be my size and older. But I still remember. And it was this weird sibling feeling where we were in the school parking lot and he was going to walk home, but we were waiting for my mom to pick us up. And there were like big storm clouds raging, coming. And he, I was like mad at him for doing his own thing, but also scared he was going to get hurt. And we were fighting so bad, I slapped him with an open palm, like in the school parking lot. And it was that feeling of terror, you know, and like instant regret and fear. Anyway, and my kids don't fight like that. And again, the younger one, he deserves it sometimes and he just doesn't do it. And my older son, I think he likes being a mellow guy. I think he liked having the moral upper hand. But, you know, it always does give me life when I hear sisters, stories about sisters being assholes to each other. Because again, that's just like the life I don't know. So my friend told me that her daughters will yank each other's ponytails. And I'm like, thank you for telling me that. That made me feel better because like they're, you know, I remember like knees on the chest, spitting in the face kind of things like that.
Oh, yeah. So, we have more.
See, aren't you sad that you're not experiencing this? Zadie could be, imagine she had a brother come along and then he ruined her life. Because I always do think a little brother will ruin a sister's life. And, you know, she wouldn't be the genius that she is with her beautiful Parisian birthday parties, you know?
Yeah. No, I know. She's missing out, but, you know, I don't know. Then she would have had a mom who's dead in a ditch somewhere. So,
yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And who's like mad at her or just more angry at her life. And your pelvic floor is probably in much better shape, you know, just with just hers. So,
yeah. I will say, though, like, I'm kind of, you know, I hate to identify this way, but I'm kind of a highly sensitive person. Like, noise, all of those things, I'm so sensitive to. And I'm so grateful to have one child in that way, because if I'm driving her and her friend somewhere, I seriously feel like I'm going to jump out of the car while it's moving because it's just so loud, even though they're not fighting. They're having fun. Mm. They're giggling maniacally. And I'm like, it's making me want to jump out of my skin. So that is, you know, that's what you have to get used to when you have siblings. Yeah. I know my sisters and I fought all the time. And yeah, even if you're not fighting, you're making noise. And so, you know, as much as that sounds like, I don't know, I hate to admit it, but that just shows like
no,
the weakness.
Accurate. Like, and no, stop saying this. Say your self-knowledge and your accuracy.
Self-knowledge, sure.
And our two boys are friends with another set of brothers, which is wonderful. And also at the same time, we were driving them home from the movies and they were all being so stupid. It was like Dogman movie. So they're all going Chicken Jockey or whatever the fuck. But is that the Dogman movie?
It doesn't matter.
But I was like, I want to drive home as fast as I possibly can to get them out of the car.
Or just
but
like,
I
close
can't.
Your eyes and let go of the wheel.
And again, they're like having a good time. But you follow that instinct. You are right. They don't get quieter the more of them there are. So they don't collaborate. I love this conversation. Siblings are always something that people think they know something about and they don't. And it's deeply personal. And siblings don't always guarantee happiness or friendship or, you know, anything easy on the parents. And then I think we go deeper. And when there's so many siblings, then you start, I feel like once you get above a certain number of siblings, I always feel like the oldest siblings are getting abused in some way because they end up raising the kids and like having their children, like childhood's taken from them. So, you know, I think
then
that you
have
the
feeling of, and my family was like, do I matter? There's five of us. Would anyone notice if I'm not there? You know, so obviously my daughter, you feel that.
Joy, can you tell people where they can find your writing or your work, anything like that? Because I know you've covered this topic before and there's people out there who have one kid or thinking about how many kids to have or, you know, just want to learn more about you. Where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm on Substack. I have a Substack called Midweek Joy and it's just Joy Natanya Thompson. Substack. I don't know. But you can find me there, Midweek Joy. And I have written about it before. I'd love to write about it more if people want me to. I know that I'm desperate to hear from other people who have only. So hopefully this, you know, helped someone feel a little less alone.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think it helps people be a little bit more careful about the things they, you know, just the silly opinions they toss off about assuming, you know, when it comes to how many kids parents choose to have or can have. And I also wanted to say, I think that when parents don't have help nearby, I'm never surprised whenever I hear someone doesn't have folks nearby to help watch that they stuck with one. I'm like, that's very, again, like self-aware, intelligent, strategic. Mm-hmm. Quinn, any thoughts about kids, siblings before we sign off for today?
No, you know, the only thing I could think of back when we were, just, no, not to start a whole new thing, but just to go back to, you know, sitting at the playground and people asking you, and even with the best of intentions, or they think they're being helpful, is when you're not pregnant yet or struggling to be pregnant and people say the thing like, have a glass of wine and relax. And you're just like, motherfucker. And again, sometimes they're just dishes and sometimes it's well-intentioned, but there's a great, what is like the Stoic quote? Like basically like you could just choose to not have an opinion on this specific thing, You could just not. Mm-hmm. Which I tell my boys all the time, because they're the like the dumbest, most like unearned, confident white guys. You know, I have this, Claire, did I tell you the plane story? I think I'll finish with this. How we were sitting on, and they're smart kids, they're curious kids, they ask big questions, they care, they're thoughtful, they're so fucking dumb. And we were sitting on a plane, and one of my kids, the oldest one, looks back, and he's looking out the window, and we're getting ready to take off. And straight-faced, more confidence than any you have ever had about anything in your life, that the sky is blue, he goes, they don't even need that rudder. And I said, and I genuinely was like, what did you, what? He goes, they don't even need that rudder. Like, why is it? It's just a waste. And I was fighting so many wolves inside my head to just be like, you're the dumbest fucking person alive. I don't care how old you are or how long you've been on this planet. Slash, like, you're right. We should, let's go tell the pilot and let's go tell all the engineers who understand. Like, and you're just like, ah, God damn it. This is the problem. This is the whole, you people are the fucking problem. They don't even need that rudder. All right. Sure. What else do you believe? Jesus. I mean, it's like, this is
I don't mean to, I'm not trying to one up you, but I was watching the kids play basketball and I told my son, my older son, I was like, one of the kids on your team needs to use his body more when he plays. And my younger son said, you don't use your body when you play basketball. And I went off on him because the way he mansplained basketball to me, and I'm not like a basketball genius, but I did grow up watching Michael Jordan and the Bulls play. And the next day, my husband saw him, this younger kid, play basketball. He's like, FYI, James doesn't know how to play basketball at all. It was clear by watching him. He doesn't understand shit. So
dude, you're fucking terrible at it, bud. I don't know what to tell you. I remember when we walked out of Barbie and my youngest son looked at my daughter and goes, let me tell you what it was really about. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? That was the point of the movie. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Go back in and watch it again. God, there's
okay, I will say, though, that the confidence thing might just be this generation and not gendered, because Zadie just started playing basketball. She had her first game ever on Saturday. Driving home, she's like, well, I think I'm going to go pro. I believe it. I believe her.
It's not going to put a bunch of people in fucking danger. That's fine.
Yeah. No, Jesus. I support this. I will go to her games when she is pro. Joy, thank you for coming. Thank you for reaching out and proposing this chat. This was fun. We could talk about this forever. I hope you guys have a gentle, now that I know what year it is, unfortunately, I hope 2026 is not increasingly painful as it is trending, but you know, high hopes.
That's it for this week.
You're gonna make it. You're doing great, or you're just doing it, or just you, period.
Just stop right there. But for more, you can hit subscribe right in your podcast player of choice.
Please share our show with another parent in your life or anyone who might get a kick out of listening to what the hell we're going through.
And if you have literally 3 seconds, just push your thumb against the 5-star review button wherever you might be listening.
But no pressure, honestly. We know you're busy.
Head to notrightnow.show for more, or send us feedback, questions, horror stories, doxing, whatever it is, at questions@notrightnow.show.